Lutheran Public Radio is now a nonprofit organization. That means all past, present, and future gifts to LPR are tax deductible. Please consider making a gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate by check, make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio, and mail it to LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also make a tax-deductible gift online, issuesetc.org. Thanks for your support. Welcome back to Issues Etc. Here's a question that, even if you had an answer to it, it still doesn't get to the real issue. Is homosexuality genetic? You'll hear homosexuals sometimes say, God made me this way. Now, that's a metaphysical explanation, but if you press them, they will say, you know, how do you know it's not in my genes? How do you know I am not genetically programmed to prefer and be oriented toward the same sex, not the opposite sex, and to engage in homosexual behavior? Is there an answer to that? Is there a medical answer to that, a science answer to that question? And even if there were, say, a gay gene, would that mean that homosexuality were natural or good or beneficial? Our phone number for the next half hour as we talk with Dr. Donald Calbreth about the genetic origins, such as they are, of homosexuality, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MY-IE, or email your questions or comments to us, talkback@issuesetc.org. Dr. Donald Calbreth taught chemistry for more than two decades at Whitworth University in Spokane, Washington, and he's author of an article in the Christian Research Journal titled, Is There a Gay Gene? Dr. Calbreth, welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
What for you would constitute proof that there is a gay gene? What would you have to see in the science to conclude there is a gene that is that conditions for homosexual behavior?
Well, let me do two things. Let me summarize some information in the article and also talk about a fairly well-known genetic defect, phenylketonuria. This is a birth defect that affects a fair number of newborns. There is a specific chemical produced in high amounts in these kiddos that can be measured, and we can diagnose them that way very early in life. We have identified a specific enzyme that is deficient in these children, and we have specific treatments for this. We have none of this for homosexuality. What I mentioned in the article were some other issues. One of the problems with the research is we haven't defined the populations. There's such a spectrum of behavior. Kinsey talked about six or seven categories, from exclusively heterosexual to exclusively homosexual, and everybody in between. And you need to define those populations, and most of the studies have not done that. The marker has to be reproducible. Different researchers using different techniques have to come up with the same findings. That has not been the case with any of the studies on homosexuality. The markers need to distinguish the populations very clearly. It needs to be a very clear, this marker shows with 95% reliability that this individual is or is not. And then the big problem is observer bias. Some of the key pieces of research that have been done on the gay gene have been done by gay activists. And so they interpret their data a little bit differently than I would. So you've got to be able to rule out observer bias also.
So it sounds like the biggest problem from the outset is defining what constitutes homosexuality. You write about orientation versus behavior. Why is that distinction important here?
Well, because a person might have a tendency or an attraction to some degree or another towards someone of the same gender, but they may not act upon that. Heterosexuals have the same problem. If a married man has an attraction towards another woman, that's the orientation. If he acts upon it, that's called adultery, and that's certainly a very different situation. So one of the issues is, you know, the behavior of the individuals.
What is a gene?
A gene is a piece of DNA. you'll get a definition that is probably 6 months out of date. But a gene is a piece of DNA that causes the formation of particular proteins, particular cellular structures that have a specific function. The term is in a state of flux right now. The more we learn about the gene, the harder it is to explain exactly what it is.
I mean, I've had it described to me as, in old computer parlance, you had code, and then you had commands in those codes, set commands that were part of the computer language, and all that the genes were various commands in a long string of code. And if you run the code, you get the results that these genes are programmed to do. And yet I hear people talk about turning genes on and off, about genes being dormant and then coming on, and it becomes quite confusing.
Well, you could use the computer analogy. Now, I learned computer programming back when they were doing Fortran and punch cards, so you know, things have changed. But genes do turn on and off. There may be a point in a cell's lifespan that a particular gene product isn't needed. So the gene has a switch that says, don't make it right now. Maybe later we need that product, so the gene switch says go ahead and make it. It's the same as an if-then statement in computer programming. If this is true, then you go down this piece of the program. If something else is true, you go down another piece of the program. So the analogy works.
Kind of the old school way, I think, of asking a question about whether or not something is genetic, they used to use the word hereditary, would be to simply study family history. I mean, I go to the doctor and he says, does your dad have high cholesterol? Does your dad have hypertension? Do anyone back two generations have these conditions? And they're obviously trying to sort out the probability that I have inherited some tendency that direction.
Right, right. And that's still very useful in a lot of healthcare studies, but it doesn't necessarily prove that this is a genetic thing. My dad's high blood pressure when I was a teenager was probably very much due to my behavior and not any hereditary condition that he had. But if we know something about the genes, we can more easily identify individuals who, say, have a genetic propensity for high cholesterol, and there are some hereditary disorders of that, propensity for different types of cancer. There's a great deal of research going on in that area also. We can screen, we can pick these things up earlier and initiate treatment, or at least be on the lookout for developing symptoms. The argument in homosexual circles is, well, you know, this is the way we're made. This is not a choice that we're making. This is the way we are. Live with it.
Have genes in other cases been demonstrated to determine behavior?
To my knowledge, no. There's been a lot of studies on what I call biochemistry of behavior, and I've done some writing in that area. But there's no good genetic information for this sort of thing. Now, for some of the situations such as Down syndrome, you can actually screen for Down syndrome prior to the birth of the baby and detect that. Phenylketonuria, as I mentioned, has some developmental issues. If it's not caught early and treated, you can develop mental retardation, things like this. Patients with autism, I'm doing a project with one of my colleagues at Whitworth on autism. There appears to be some genetic component to this, and there's certainly a lot of serious behavioral issues in autism. But in strictly behavioral types of things, no. Information just isn't there.
Can you come at it from a different direction? Here we only have about a minute before our first break.
Okay.
Basically saying, let's look at people and their brain chemistry now, people who are homosexual, people who are heterosexual, and then try and get at a genetic cause or the lack thereof by saying, look, they have different brain chemistry. What has been done there by way of research? About a minute.
Very little in terms of actual brain chemistry, mostly because it's illegal to go scooping brains out of people and studying them. There have been some studies on autopsies, a couple of studies that I referred to in the article that are very flawed, very heavily criticized by researchers. There's really not a whole lot of good research on chemical changes in the brain associated with homosexuality.
We're talking with Dr. Donald Calbreath. He taught chemistry for more than two decades at Whitworth University in Spokane, Washington. He's author of an article in the Christian Research Journal titled, Is There a Gay Gene? Our phone number this Friday afternoon, the 6th of March, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. You can also email your questions or comments to us, talkback@issuesetc.org, talkback@issuesetc.org. When we come back, 10 more minutes with Dr. Donald Calbreath. Here's the argument, and we'll deal with it on the other side. We've alluded to it already. The argument is, this is the way I'm made. I was born this way. Or if it's more sophisticated in its expression, there's a gay gene and I've got it. But that's not the end of the argument. That's just the kind of the premise. The end of the argument is, if this is the way I was made, if I was born this way, if there's a gay gene and I've got it, I can't change. In fact, to try to change this behavior, this orientation, would be unnatural. We'll talk about that argument after this.
Are you uncomfortable with making an online credit card donation? Well, here's an option for you. Call me at 618-223-8382, and I'll personally take your credit card donation and process it for you. Hi, this is Craig Feitinger of Lutheran Public Radio. Call me today, 618-223-8382, and make a secure credit card donation to help support Issues, etc. 618-223-8382.
Here are a few of the features of the new Lutheran Study Bible from Concordia Publishing House. Study notes, application notes, and prayers from a uniquely Lutheran perspective. 120 maps, charts, and diagrams. You'll find law and gospel application notes, center column references, and quotes from the Church Fathers. Check out the Lutheran Study Bible at our homepage, issuesetc.org, or pre-order the Lutheran Study Bible by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040.
We love our on-demand listeners. You're listening to Issues, etc.
Noted author and Christian apologist Craig Hawkins on why you should support Issues, etc.
It's my pleasure to recommend to you Issues, etc. It's one of the few programs discussing crucial concerns for Christians. It's done in a dynamic format, again, discussing crucial issues, and in an insightful manner. The program is very much needed. In my opinion, it's one of the most important broadcasts on the air, and it's one of my favorites. So if you want to grow in your faith, know what you believe and why, then this program is for you. I want to encourage you to listen, and I want to encourage you to support the broadcast, both prayerfully and financially.
You can support the worldwide outreach of Issues, etc. by making a tax-deductible gift today. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio and send to LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234, or you can make a credit card donation at our website, issuesetc.org, Defending the Faith, Teaching the Truth, Issues, etc.
I'm Todd Wilkin. Welcome back to Issues, etc. This Friday afternoon, the 6th of March, we're talking about the gay gene. Is there or isn't there? Dr. Donald Calbreath is our guest. So to summarize what we've discussed so far as the research goes, is there or isn't there? Is there hope of finding one or determining once and for all that there isn't one, Dr. Calbreath?
Well, the data pretty strongly suggests that there is not one, but it's always very hard to prove a negative because there's always the suspicion that the next experiment might show that there is, in fact, one. But I think if you accumulate enough evidence, the argument that there is a gay gene becomes harder and harder to make. In fact, a number of homosexual activists are saying it doesn't matter. We don't really think that there is one. We don't need one. We're just going to make our arguments anyway. It's really kind of interesting that the emphasis on the gay gene on the part of some of the gay activists has sort of diminished. In fact, one of them published a book a few years ago arguing strongly against all of the gay gene information and saying, you know, there's some really sloppy science out there.
Here's the argument. I'd like your response. And it is, if there is a gay gene and I have it, let's say that someone is convinced that there is and that they have the gay gene, the argument is, I cannot change this orientation or behavior, and to do so would be at least unnatural and perhaps even harmful to myself. How do you respond?
Well, it would be like saying, well, I have blue eyes, and it's very hard for me to change my blue eyes, and so, don't make me change. The premise is, if there is a gay gene, now, the data is showing that there is not a gay gene. The data is also showing that change is possible, that the reparative therapies or the what's called now the sexual reorientation therapies can be successful. It's not easy to do, in part because it takes a long time, in part because I think a lot of folks involved in this don't know the right therapies yet. But, the only way that argument's going to hold is if there can be demonstrated a genetic situation where there is, in fact, a gay gene.
If someone could determine that there's a gene that lends a propensity to alcoholism or to compulsive lying or something like that, it still wouldn't make alcoholism a beneficial lifestyle or lying right, would it?
Oh, no, definitely. I mean, there have been a number of research studies trying to find a gene for alcoholism, and we do not justify that behavior. We work with the individual to find ways to control their drinking or stop it, to modify their behavior, just because there may be a tendency towards something does not necessarily make that particular behavior right.
Okay, then let's talk about, if you could make the case to the average layperson about the yes or no of a gay gene, why specifically, based on the research such as there is, would you say that the evidence suggests no?
The two major pieces of research, as I mentioned, were both done by gay activists. Dean Hamer, the National Institute of Health or Mental Health, came out with the study on the gay gene, said he identified it. The subsequent research by his research team failed to reproduce these results. And in fact, a paper a few years back basically proved that his earlier studies were wrong. He has since moved to an entirely different area of research. He, by the way, not only has written about the gay genes, he wrote a book on the God gene, so he's kind of getting around. Simon LeVay, who's the researcher at the University of San Francisco, published a study on brain structure, and nobody has been able to reproduce this study in the last 15 or more years since it came out. He, in fact, shut down his research and has become a full-time gay activist. He never shared his data with anybody. He talked about minute changes in a very, very minute piece of the brain. He failed to control the study for a number of important variables, and nobody believes his work anymore. So basically, the research, what research there is, has the two key experiments have been discredited.
Keith is listening in Chesterfield, Missouri. Keith, thanks for waiting on the line. Welcome.
Hi, Dr. Calvers.
Hi, how are you?
Pretty good. And normally, I've done a little work in this myself. Normally, though, in genetic problems, there's anatomical differences, like with Down syndrome or autism or any of the genetic things. There's normally changes, subtle changes, we can say, but you know, such as skin or propensity towards different diseases and so forth. But if there was a gene for this, why would they want to trigger it? Because that's how genes act. You have to have a trigger in order to activate that gene. That's why they say to alcoholics, well, gosh, you know, if you do have an alcoholic gene, why would you want to activate the thing?
Yeah.
Keith, thank you very much.
That's a good question. Of course, some genetic disorders, autism and others, you know, they are there, and they just become activated as part of the growth of the individual. But he's right. With something like alcoholism, if there were a gene, your best bet is to not act upon it and not have to deal with the consequences of that sort of a thing. So,
is the gay gene topic one of those things that, in spite, you mentioned before that there are homosexual activists who will say it really doesn't matter, let's drop the subject. We are who we are in spite of, regardless of whether or not there's a genetic connection here. But I'm wondering whether or not it's one of those kind of urban legends that may persist even after the good research has shown that there probably isn't and the bad research has failed to prove that there is.
Well, I think we're seeing this in California right now. If you followed the hoorah around the Proposition 8 that was passed last year and the demonstrations against it by homosexuals, they're trying to make the case, and they made the argument in California that this is discrimination, this is a form of racism, that at one point this country banned interracial marriages, and that banning gay marriages is just another form of racism. 70% of the African American population in the state of California don't buy into that, as evidenced by their vote, and a number of African American leaders say, "Don't play that card with us. You know, we were born, literally, we were born black, and we can prove it. You have no evidence to show that you were born gay," and it really infuriates African Americans.
Finally, then, with only about 30 seconds, in a nutshell, is there, as far as we can tell, a gay gene?
In a nutshell, one word, no. Well, I won't say it's that simple, but there are no data to date to indicate that there is a gay gene.
Dr. Donald Calbreath taught chemistry for more than two decades at Whitworth University in Spokane, Washington. He's author of an article in the Christian Research Journal titled, "Is There a Gay Gene?" Thank you very much for being our guest.
Well, thank you. I enjoyed it.
I don't know what's in my genes. I honestly don't. I don't know whether or not I hope and pray that as I go to the physician for a physical, he doesn't find something that's been there lurking from the time I was conceived and only now will come out and kill me. Who knows? We all worry about what's in our genes. I don't know what's there. Is there perhaps a propensity toward what? Stealing money? Drinking too much? Eating too much? It's very easy to say, I was born this way, or I got it from my parents. It's in my genes. But even if there's a propensity there, and I'm willing to at least entertain the possibility that there's a propensity toward all kinds of things, written in my genetic code. After all, I got that code from a sinner who got it from a sinner who got it from a sinner. It seems to run in the family line. Doesn't make any of it right. I was born in trespasses and sin. I was born dead in trespasses and sin. And that means I'm going to sin, but it doesn't make it right. It doesn't make it good for me. It doesn't make it good for my neighbor. It doesn't make it good for society. It doesn't mean that it's helpful or right. If there was a pill I could take, I'd take it. But there isn't a pill. There's only one solution to the sin and death I was born in, written in my genetic code from Adam on. The perfect life of Jesus Christ, my Savior, lived for me, died for me. I'm Todd Wilkin. Talk with you again Monday. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.